In the grand theater of life, we all seek a comeback, a resurgence, a rekindling of our inner fire. But how do we spark that flame? Welcome to Reignite Resilience. This is not just another podcast. This is a journey, a venture into the heart of human spirit, the power of resilience, and the art of reigniting our passions.
Welcome back to another episode of Reignite Resilience. I am your co-host, Natalie Davis, and I am so excited to be back with you all. And joining me, of course, is Pam. How are you, Pam Cass?
You know, I'm fabulous. I feel like we haven't been together in a minute.
I know. I don't know what's happening.
It's been a little bit too long because
it has been.
I need this in my life. It just
exactly
like, go around. So
I think what happens is that we end up like recording like 5 days a week, and then we take a week off, and it's like, what am I supposed to do with all of this extra time on my hands?
Well, we figure out how to fill it. That's for sure.
Exactly. That's that. I don't have a problem with that.
No, not one bit. Not one bit.
I love it. Well, I am so excited about our show today because we have a special guest. So, Pam, why don't you introduce our guest? I'd love to just dive right in because we have, I feel, a lot of ground to cover just in hearing about another story of overcoming adversity in a way that we haven't touched on yet on this show.
No, we have not touched on this at all. And when I heard about this woman, I was like, she's got to be on our podcast. And so just because of the story, and I think there's so many ties to what she has gone through and just the things that we go through in life that I think there's a beautiful message here. So I'm so excited to share this. Yeah. So our special guest today is Liana Wilanda, and she is a seventh generation circus performer, a high wire walker from the world famous Wilanda family. Having performed amazing feats all over the world, after nearly losing her life in a tragic 35-foot fall from the wire, she faced her fears, overcame her trauma, and returned to the wire, performing a skywalk 25 stories above Times Square. She has proved to herself and to the world that this devastating fall would not be her defining moment, and is now sharing her inspiring message. She is on a mission to show people it is possible to rebound from trauma and rebuild a meaningful life, career, and destiny. Thank you, thank you, thank you for taking the time and joining us today. I have goosebumps because I'm just so excited about having you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So share your story, because seventh generation tightrope walker.
Yeah. So I was born into a family of circus performers. We date back to the 1780s, performing in circuses, everything from trained sea lions to flying trapeze. But four generations ago, my great-grandfather, Carl, started wire walking, and he became very well known. They were all celebrities over in Europe until they got brought over to the United States by John Ringling in 1928. Okay. And so he brought the family over here. And then then a couple generations later, I'm born, and I grew up traveling the country with my mom, my dad, and my brother in an Airstream trailer, performing, in circuses, little things when I was younger. Not until I was 13 did I perform on the high wire. But yeah, that was my life.
Okay. So your whole family, I looked at the family tree that is online and I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. And so you're born into this family. And what does that look like from very young age? Like, what does that training look like? What does your childhood look like?
So funny, people ask, what was that like? I'm like, I don't know. What is it like not traveling and walking?
We don't even know.
Yeah. So, it was just normal. I would always see my parents go up on the high wire and perform, and they would sometimes push the stroller right there under the wire so they could see me while they were performing, kind of thing. My mom was 6 months pregnant with me while she was performing on the high wire. She performed up till 6 months pregnant. There was always a low wire in our backyard when we were home off the road. And I don't remember a time I couldn't walk that wire. You'd always just go and play on it when you were little and saw your parents doing that. That was just life. I watched them. My brother and I would play and pretend like we were them on the wire. And it wasn't until I was 13 and was old enough to kind of understand that this is life and death. There are real risks I'm taking here. That's when I started performing up high after training for a while with my parents.
Okay. So you train on a lower wire, I'm assuming, close to the ground.
Yes.
Then start moving it up.
Correct. Yes. You started a wire 3 feet off the ground. So you start low and then graduate to a 10-foot high wire when you've perfected it down low. And then you eventually go to 30-foot wire for performing an act in, a show.
Okay. And when you're training, do you have safety gear on when you're young and you're training? Or is it you're from the very beginning you are?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're literally 3 feet off the ground, so you could get scratched up and stuff, but you're not, you know, you can step down off the wire. Okay. So that's why we start down low, so that you can train at a height where you're not going to, it's not death defying at that height.
Okay. You're like 3 feet. It's not that big of a deal. I literally get butterflies when I get on the top step of my step ladder. So thank you for that piece of it.
But at the 10 foot, when you're training, do you have safety?
Why? No, you just got to get good enough down low that you know you're fine.
Or they let you.
10 foot, and then you get to 10 foot and you got to like get, it's all about your mind being strong, right?
Yeah.
Remember, oh, this looks scary up here, but I know that I can do this because I did it down there and I got comfortable down there.
Were there things that your parents did when you were training on the low wire? Mm-hmm. Were there things that they did to help with that mindset to get you into that space where if I can do it at this level, I can do it at the 10 feet and it's not as scary?
I mean, they would tell us that. They would also do things like they would toss pine cones at my brother and I were training because you have to be ready for anything. I tell a story about when I was 30 feet in the air and I was going down into a split on a bar between my brother and father's shoulders. They were holding, we call it a pyramid. Mm-hmm. And I was sliding down the split and a bee stung me. And I was glad for those pine cones being tossed at me because I learned that it doesn't matter. Like, you have to focus on your task at hand. You have to focus on what you're doing in that moment. So they would do things like that. They also taught us to like go reach for the wire if we ever were to fall. So much so that if we were, my brother and I were playing and we just stepped off the wire and walked off, we weren't allowed to do that. We had to physically turn around, grab the wire with our hands, and then we could walk off. You know, but they wanted that to be second nature. But it was just about as we graduated higher, they'd be there with us. Of course, my dad would always be under us, like looking up, body, and saying, it's the same thing. I know it looks scarier, but it's the exact same thing.
Okay. I love that. And what is your birth order? Are you older or is Nick older?
I'm older.
You're older. Okay, so you're the oldest.
I look much younger, though.
Yes,
perfect.
You do.
I love that.
I thought you were much younger.
You're welcome, Nick.
It's funny. Because in the tree that showed the family tree, it has his date of birth. It didn't have yours. So I'm like, oh, she's probably much younger.
No, we're not even two. We're a little under 2 years apart. So we're fairly close in age. Okay. Yeah, he's the baby.
So he's following your lead as you're, and I'm assuming that you guys are progressing together, especially with less than 2 years between you. If you're going from 3 to 10, he's going from 3 to 10 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I started performing up high first because I was older. It was a couple years after that he started performing up high. But yeah.
What age did you start performing?
Well, little things in the circus, like I would do some aerial stuff that was, you know, not as much risk. I was 5 years old. I remember performing that. Always, like, my parents would put me in a cute costume and I'd wave to the audience in the opening parade, stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, on the high wire, they waited till I asked them because they never wanted to push that on me. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 13, I had decided I wanted to join the act. And I went to them and asked them, and they said, okay, go out back and practice and show us that you mean business. And so I did. I'd go about for a couple of weeks by myself, practice. And once they saw that I was serious, they came out and started training me. So I was 13 when I started performing up high professionally.
When I saw you talk in Vegas, you talked about not focusing on the wire when you're walking, you're focusing on where you're going.
Uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that goes along with life. Don't focus on this, focus on where you're
going. Yeah, don't look down, look at your destination. So we always look kind of at the end of the wire where we're heading. You know, we're not looking at our feet where we're stepping. That's all feel. We feel the wire with our foot and then kind of slide into place. You're looking at where you're going. You're not looking down at where the danger is.
Yeah, so you're trusting that your feet know what to do. As you're focusing on where you're going. Yeah, as soon as you look down, it's all the fear, I would imagine, that would just be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, not when you're a seasoned wire walker, you're used to it. But yeah, I mean, you're not focusing on where your feet are stepping at all, because we remember I trained down low doing laps back and forth for hours. So I could certainly make it across the fire up high.
Muscle memory at that point.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love that.
Well, when you decided at 13 then to actually train with the team, some of those being family members, I'm assuming, I think you reference it to you and your family as being like circus royalty. So what was that like? You know, being the 13-year-old that's like, is there pressure to prove yourself? What does that look like?
I don't call myself circus royalty, but part of my family as that, because we date back so far, because my great grandfather really put our name on the map with his amazing feats. Pressure, gosh, my parents never pressured me. We were homeschooled for much of the year, then we would fit back into our private school when we came home from the tour. So that was, we had to do that, but performing was not a pressure. You know, if you want to do it, great, but if not, which I so appreciate because I genuinely love it. Many people I grew up with, they were kind of stuck in performing and they didn't like it. So yes. I'm so thankful that my parents gave me that choice. I don't know. I mean, the pressure is when you're up high and you're looking down, you're about to start the act, you know, that's when the pressure is. That's when your mental toughness, you show kind of who you are in that moment. Because even as wire walkers, it is scary. Like if you move to, we would put our hire up in one building and perform like maybe that week. Then we take it all down and move to another building. So that wire is going to feel a little different. It's going to look a little different. So that would be scary sometimes. That's the pressure point where you say, no, I do this down low. I can do this, you know, and you have to take that first step out.
Is there something that you do to mentally prepare yourself before you step your foot on that wire?
You know, my family, we always pray before we perform. That's just what we do in life. But yeah, you just, a normal higher act, you just do it. When I'm standing on top of Times Square, that is a thing where you're like, oh, this is, what am I thinking? This is really scary. Like all these fears come in your head for a split second, but then you say, no, this is what I was born to do. You know, this is what I trained for, this moment my whole life. I'm not going to let these lies in my head telling me I'm not good enough and what am I doing rob me of this experience.
And did you do Times Square prior to the accident or was Times Square post-accident?
Times Square was my comeback performance after the accident.
That was. Yeah. So you'd never done Times Square before?
No.
Oh, wow. I know that your story of resiliency, because we all have adversity that comes towards us in life, but one of those is in having a high wire walk accident. Is that how you, yes? Just can you share that with the listeners? What happened? Kind of bring us back to that day, what you can recall, what became fuzzy and where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So my brother had called me and asked if I wanted to come down to Florida and join his high wire troop because they were training to do an 8-person pyramid on the wire. It was to be a world record. It was to break our own world record that we still hold from Japan in 2001 for the highest 4-level 8-person pyramid on the high wire. And so he asked if I wanted to come down there. I said, yes, of course. So I went down and was training with them. It was my passion. I love it. And so we were doing one of the final rehearsals up high, full height in the tent before the show was to open. It was a day or two before the show was to open. And I remember building up the pyramid. You know, there's several levels. I was on the second level. And then the pyramid started, bottom guys started walking the pyramid out onto the wire. And I said out loud, guys, this feels great because it felt really solid and good. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, I got this jolt like I'd never felt in my whole 35 prior years of wire walking. Mm-hmm. And we're trained to stay very solid on the wire because I have someone on a bar on my shoulders above me. So I can't move my shoulders because I'll knock them off. I have people below me. I'm standing on a bar. So I can't move my feet. So I was trying to stay as solid as I could. And I just remember my balancing pole going up and down and up. And then it went totally vertical.
Wow.
And it pulled me off. And I was like, okay, this is happening. It all was kind of slow motion.
Mm.
And I thought, okay. And nothing had happened like this to me in my life. So it was crazy, but it was very calm. I was never scared in that moment. You can't be scared of those moments. You know, you have to think through in your head, what's the best option? So I thought, okay, I have to grab the wire like my parents had taught me. So I remember turning to look for the wire. It was below me at that moment. And I went to reach, but I was too far away because I was on the second level and I fell away from the wire. Mm-hmm. So I saw that wire below me and it slowly, fast, but in my mind, it was very slowly moved above me. And so I was like, okay, this is happening. What do I do? And for some reason, I thought about my little boy at 5 at the time, my son. And I thought, I'm right-handed, my stronger arm. I want to protect my right side to pick him up. I don't know why that came to my mind. I thought about that. And I think I tried to kind of protect my right side. And I think I accomplished that kind of twisting to the left because I broke primarily the left side of my body. So I thought about that. And I saw the ground and the big circus ring. I saw it getting closer and closer and closer to my face. And then smack, you know, I hit. And I couldn't breathe. And I looked up at a man that was on the ground standing above me. And I was like, I can't breathe. And I realized, oh, it's just the wind knocked out of me. It's okay. You know, my breath finally came back. My brother was at my side almost instantly. He was on the wire as well, but he was able to grab that wire. So he says he doesn't remember how he shimmied off the wire and got down, but he was at my side almost instantly. And I kept trying to get up. I wanted to check on everyone else. I was so worried. So funny how it comes to me sometimes when I'm talking about it. I remember that feeling of being so worried about everyone else, you know? And I kept wanting to get up. My brother was like, no, stay down. And I kept going, no, I want to get up. And I thought about an accident that happened back in 1962 that I was told about. My great uncle was paralyzed from the waist down from that accident. And so I thought about that. There's video actually of me kicking my legs, laying on my back, kicking my legs in the air, going, I'm fine. I'm fine. Let me up. But what my brother has told me since, I had no idea that my face, I was completely unrecognizable within a minute of the accident. My face had swollen out so much. There was blood coming out of everything. I had no idea. I was just going to get up and make sure everyone was okay. So finally, I was listening to my brother and I just laid there and waited for the ambulance. I remember so many things. I remember my brother calling my dad and me and like, Dad, we fell. I get emotional when it's about my family, you know, and thinking what they must have felt. I'm like, I'm fine, right? But I'm thinking about my dad hearing that.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that. I remember finally the ambulance getting there, you know, the paramedics getting me the ambulance and my brother jumping in the ambulance with us and getting to the hospital. I never lost consciousness. Got to the hospital. A doctor friend of ours heard about it, ran over and was like right there, was like, you're going to be okay. And then it kind of all gets blurry. They gave me medication. I was in an incredible amount of pain at that point. The whole time I was like, I'm fine. Guys, I'm fine. I'm going to be fine. But I didn't know the extent of my injuries. I didn't know. My dad recently told my mom that the doctor told him they didn't know that I'd make it through the night. I didn't know that. I was fine. You know, shall I list my injuries? Kind of.
Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
So I broke my left calcaneus. That's in your heel. Mm-hmm. That bone was tenting out, and that's a pretty serious injury, they say, as far as like quality of life after the injury. So I broke my left calcaneus. I broke my left humerus. I got a rod and 9 screws here. That's a bone in my arm, like kind of my bicep area, that big bone there. I broke ribs, lacerated my liver, punctured my right ear canal, knocked out a bunch of teeth, sheared a bunch, like at an angle off, and I broke every single bone on my face. Everyone from the like orbitals of my eyes and down was like shattered. Hence, I was unrecognizable, you know, within a minute of the accident. I had no idea. I thought I was fine. I didn't quite know. I was in the hospital and everything was blurry. They had done a handful of surgeries on me, but I wasn't real aware of that because I was under medication at that time. The first surgery they did is they repaired my calcaneus, the bone on my heel. I think the next day they did my arm. Then I had a day off from it. I turned 40 in the trauma unit, which was great, right? You know, to put my face back together. I had something, I believe it was 10 plates and 72 screws in my face. Mm. I still have a ton of metal in my face. All of that's kind of a blur. I don't remember a lot of that. The moment that I remember at the hospital very vividly is I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, I'm not breathing. Oh my goodness, I'm not breathing. I looked and my mom was in a chair and the dear friend was there sitting there. And I was like trying to go, mom, I can't breathe.
We hope that you've enjoyed part one of our two-part interview with Liana Walenda, the world-renowned and known seventh-generation high-wire walker who experienced such a tragic event at an early stage in life while attempting to do an 8-person pyramid. Come back and join us for part two. We'll continue to hear about Liana's recovery story and how she's overcome this one experience in life and is determined to not let it define her and what she's going to do in the future. We'll see you soon. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Reignite Resilience. We hope that you had amazing ahas and takeaways. Remember to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, like it and download the upcoming episodes. And if you know anyone in your life that is looking to continue to ignite their resilience, share it with them. We look forward to seeing you on our future episodes. And until then, continue to reignite that fire within your hearts.